It seems to me like the logical thing to do is say, go and work with your doctor who knows what your particular circumstances are and can recommend the best course of action for the government instead to snatch the authority and begin to dictate to people what they should do. Makes very little sense, and particularly when you're dealing with the most important thing you have, which is your health. And if they can mandate about your health, they can mandate about anything. You're opening Pandora's box.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Conversations That Matter. I'm your host, Alex Newman, and today we are so honored to have with us Dr. Ben Carson. He's one of my heroes. He's a hero to many all across this country. We could spend our whole 30 minutes going through his biography. We won't do that, but I do want to point out a couple of highlights here. Born to a single mother in Detroit and yet went on to graduate from Yale University. He became the youngest director of pediatric neurosurgery at Johns Hopkins Children's Center. He served 33 years there. And I mean, this is just incredible. He performed the first ever separation of craniopagus twins conjoined at the back of the head, a medical breakthrough. He has 70 honorary doctorates, if you can imagine that. He's the author of 9 books, co-author of 4 books with his wife. He served as the Secretary of Housing and Urban Development during the Trump administration. And most recently, he is now the founder and chairman of the American Cornerstone Institute. This new institute has a little Patriots program, which I'm terribly excited about. And so, Dr. Carson, I'd like to start there. Would you tell us about the American Cornerstone Institute and also the book you guys are about to release now, Why America Matters, for the Little Patriots program?
Yes, well, thank you so much for that introduction. You know, when I finished my term as the Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, I said, now I can retire. I had tried it before and failed. I said, now I can really retire. But it didn't take long after the election to see the direction that the country was going in. And I recognized that I probably would not be able to relax on the golf course. So myself and several outstanding members of the team at HUD got together to create this think tank / do tank. American Cornerstone, based on 4 cornerstone principles that allowed America to go from a bunch of ragtag militiamen to the pinnacle of the world in record time. That was no coincidence. There were principles, one of which was our faith. Our faith teaches us how to interact with each other. Our Judeo-Christian values say, love your neighbor, not cancel your neighbor. Not try to make life difficult for anybody who disagrees with you. That's completely antithetical to our founding principles. The second principle being liberty. There were so many people who came to this country from all over the world because they wanted to be free. They wanted to be able to live the lives that they wanted. They wanted to be able to worship God in the way that they wanted, without the heavy foot of government telling them everything they could and could not do. And if you look around us today, you'll see that the heavy hand of government is encroaching upon all of those liberties that we hold so dear. And then the concept of community. One of the things that made us great was the fact that we had a lot of people with diverse talents and abilities who were able to work together. And this happened all over this country so that the communities grew and grew and began to coalesce and form the basis for an incredibly powerful nation. And then the last cornerstone being life, from the womb to the tomb. And as we've grown more callous about life, we've grown more callous in our relationships toward each other. You know, we the American people are not each other's enemies, but we're allowing certain elements to manipulate us and make us think that we're enemies. And we cannot be destroyed by Russia or China or Iran or North Korea, but we can easily be destroyed from within. A house divided against itself cannot stand. And then with the Little Patriots program, really directing that toward the children, it's so important to make sure that they learn the right things and the foundation of their understanding of who they are as Americans. And as we've seen recently, there's been an attempt to distort what children are learning. You know, it was Nikita Khrushchev in the late 50s who said to Dwight David Eisenhower, our president, your grandchildren's children will live under communism and we won't have to fire one shot. And what did he know? In order to create that transition, all you had to do is gain control of the educational system and indoctrinate the kids, gain control of the media to spoon feed the populace what you want them to hear and exclude what you didn't want them to hear. Trade dependency on God with dependency on government, and raise the national debt to such levels that you could justify massive taxation, redistribution of wealth, and complete dependence. All of those are the things that are going on right now as we move headlong toward socialism and communism. And we must recognize those things, and we must intervene to change them.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, Dr. Carson. And one of the first times I was really exposed to your work in depth years ago was actually a documentary you had done about the reading issues plaguing America, the massive levels of illiteracy that we have in this country. And you were talking about phonics, which, of course, has been a passion of mine for a long time. You've now set up, I think, hundreds of these Ben Carson reading rooms around the country. Tell us about, your book, Why America Matters. I can't wait to get copies for my kids, and I hope everybody else will get some too, because I agree with you, this information is critical. But we need our kids to be able to read the books and to be able to read other material. So tell us about phonics. You know, why did you get involved in this debate over reading methods of teaching so many years ago?
Well, because looking at the data, which I think is so critical and something that we don't seem to do very much of anymore, and that's the way I get into all these controversies about, vaccines and stuff like that, because we don't actually allow the evidence to guide what we're doing. Many studies have demonstrated that if a child is reading at grade level by grade three, it completely changes the trajectory of their lives, completely changes the high school graduation rate, and a whole bunch of other factors that lead to success or non-success in our society. And therefore, that's why we started putting up the reading rooms. We're planning to have the 250th opened very soon. And
Wow.
they're all over the country. We particularly target Title I schools, where a lot of kids come from homes that don't have a lot of books, and they don't have access to a lot of books. And we want them to be able to go to a place that's very comfortable. These are designed usually by the parents and the school officials in the group, so that one near Cape Canaveral is shaped like a space capsule. You go in there and you can see the little windows, and you look out of one window and you can see the Earth, another window you can see the moon, another window you can see ET. And these kinds of things are really fascinating to the children in Denver. We have one that's shaped like a teepee and different things. But the books are fascinating books. And the kids get to go in there and they read, and they actually can get points for the books that they read and trade them in for prizes. And in the beginning, that's what they're aiming to do, is to get prizes. But it doesn't take long before that begins to change the way that they look at reading, the way that they look at academics, and it begins to have a real impact on their academic performance.
Yeah, that's amazing. And in terms of what the children are being taught, there's been a lot of controversy over what's going on in the public schools, especially over the last few months. We've got parents up in arms over critical race theory, and then we've got schools saying, oh, there's no critical race theory here. We've got the 1619 Project, which is being used as curriculum across America, saying America has this evil actually embedded in its DNA. So in other words, there's really no way for us to fix it. What do you think about what's going on in the public schools, this issue over CRT and the impact that it's having on our children? What should parents be doing to kind of guide their children properly on these questions?
Well, I'm very proud of the parents who, after finding out what their children were being taught, stood up and said, yes, we do want to have input in terms of what our children are being taught. Why shouldn't they? One thing that seems to have been forgotten and is frequently forgotten by the leftists, the Marxists, is that this country was designed for the people and is supposed to be run on the will of the people. And the government works for the people. The people aren't subjects of the government, but we seem to be forgetting that. And this is very fortuitous that we had the COVID, which allowed the parents to begin to see what their children were being taught as sort of a blessing in disguise, quite frankly, because, Khrushchev's prediction would come true otherwise. They would gain control of our educational system and have unfettered access to the developing minds of our young people at the most formative time. Remember, it was Vladimir Lenin who said, "Give me your children to teach for 4 years, and the seed that I sow will never be uprooted." They know the importance of that critical time during a child's development. And even the Bible talked about it. In Proverbs 22:6, it says, "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he'll not depart from it." So it is critical that our parents have an influence in terms of what is being taught to the future generations of our nation. And we should in no way just leave that to a bunch of bureaucrats to determine. And you see a tremendous proliferation right now of homeschooling because parents have become frustrated with the bureaucracy. And I think that's a good thing, particularly if we can get the money to follow the children. And that will force the public school system to begin to cooperate with the wishes of the people who pay their salaries and the people who are supposed to be their bosses.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to switch gears a little bit, Dr. Carson, and talk some about your time in the Trump administration. I want to start just by asking you, what was it like to serve in the cabinet? We had the media telling us that it was totally out of control, that it was confusion and chaos. Was that your experience? What was it like? And was the media being honest about kind of what was going on behind the scenes?
The media is being very dishonest, obviously from day one. And, as a cabinet member, I got to experience what many of the cabinet members got to experience, which was a media constantly snooping and trying to find something bad they could say about you. In my case, they said, "He bought this $31,000 dining room table, and at the same time is cutting funding for social programs." What a bunch of garbage that was. The dining room set was 50 years old, was falling apart. People were being injured by it. And facility said, "This needs to be replaced." And I said, "Okay." And these were the books you can choose from. I chose some things. And then all of this stuff started boiling up. And it was not a table, it was 17 pieces of furniture. But there was such a hoopla. And then there was an investigation that cost the taxpayers $1 million for a $31,000 set of furniture, which was never purchased, by the way.
Oh my goodness.
And it just goes to show you. And of course, I had to pay for my lawyers out of my own pocket. And then they tried to say my family was involved in running HUD, that my wife had an office there. That investigation cost the taxpayer $2 million.
Oh my goodness.
And of course, they both came up empty because there was nothing to find. And after that, I think they just gave up. They said, "This guy's clean. We're not going to find anything on him. Let's devote." But they went after a lot of other cabinet members who perhaps weren't as fortunate as I am in terms of having financial resources. And after a while, you just give up and you say, "I'm not going to do this anymore." And that's a real problem that we have in our system right now. But I found the work to be challenging and yet rewarding. We were able to establish a lot of great programs, like the Foster Youth to Independence program, because a group of young people came to us and explained their plight. You know, there are 20,000 youth who age out of foster care each year. Can you imagine being 18 years old and being out there on your own with no support? And in 4 months, our people were so stimulated, both careers and politicals working together came up with that Foster Youth to Independence program. In 4 months, it was implemented, and we had places for those children to stay and wraparound services, because you need that as well in order to become a self-sufficient adult. And then there were programs like the Envision Centers, where we get the federal, state, and local programs, along with nonprofits and faith-based organizations, all under one roof, with the aim of getting people out of poverty, so that that young mother with three little ones who never finished high school can go to the Envision Center, get childcare, be guided to getting her GED if she doesn't have that, and further training so that she can be self-sufficient. But more importantly, teach that to her children. That's the only way that you break those cycles of dependency. And then opportunity zones were so successful. It was thought that they would attract $100 billion worth of private capital in 10 years. It attracted 75 billion in just 2 years before COVID hit. There were a number of ways that we expanded the self-sufficiency programs. And that is so important, because real compassion is getting people to the point where they're self-sufficient. It's not just handing out more and more stuff. And, you know, obviously there seems to be a divide in our country right now as to which one is compassionate.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to talk about one of the controversies that actually began under the administration before you guys, under the Obama administration, the Affirmatively Furthering Fair Housing regulations that really seemed to a lot of people like the federal government was trying to take over zoning regulations, usurp control from local communities, and put it in Washington, D.C. And you worked to roll that back. Tell us about it, and why do you think there was this effort, and what was dangerous about it, and how do you think we should proceed on this? Should local communities continue to control their own zoning, or should that be something that Washington takes over?
Well, I think the things that work the best are when federal, state, and local work together. Again, along with the community organizations, the clergy in the area. And those were the ones that I saw that worked the best. And it doesn't mean that you build a big apartment complex in the middle of a neighborhood of single-family housing. Usually in that area, you can find an area that people agree on that's not in the middle of a bunch of single-family homes, where you can build beautiful mixed-income, mixed-purpose things that have grocery stores and other support mechanisms near there, without disturbing, you know, the character of the neighborhood. And some people say, yeah, but that's racist. What they don't know is that when you look at suburbia today, 32% of suburbia is non-white. A big transition has already occurred naturally. You don't need to be doing social engineering, but you do need to provide support, and you need to, you know, provide certain information and counseling. And when people are able to work together on that, it really solves the problem. What we tend to do, because we're being manipulated, is get into our respective corners and fire hand grenades at each other, rather than sitting down with the facts and using those to create well-functioning neighborhoods that work for everyone.
Yeah. And obviously, one of the huge issues that began under the previous administration and has now intensified under the current one is the COVID and the government's response to COVID. I think the Trump administration took a much more hands-off approach, and now we see, you know, mandates, we see the vaccine mandates, we now see them rolling it out to children as young as 5 years old. What are your thoughts about the government's response to COVID, going back to the Trump administration and then proceeding all the way up to today with the mandates on employers to force these injections on people, and then the move to vaccinate little children? Do you think that's a wise policy response?
Well, there's no question that Operation Warp Speed was successful in saving millions of lives and getting, you know, people to work together who usually are rivals. It was a major advance, and you can't take away credit for that. However, what we perhaps failed to recognize is that it was experimental. And even though it did work and it saved a lot of lives, it still is experimental. We still don't know what the long-term impact of these vaccines are. We do know when we look at the VAERS data, the Vaccine Adverse Effects Reporting System, that there are a lot more complications than we would normally see with a vaccine. In fact, when they were working on the Ebola vaccine, it had a lot fewer complications, and it was pulled off the market because of the complications. So, and the deaths that occur. And, you know, we're not really looking at science, and we're not doing things in a scientific fashion. For instance, when we're talking about children, the mortality rate for children is 0.025%. That's the same as seasonal flu. And we don't do all these things every year for seasonal flu, so why would we be doing those? And now we're talking about, you know, getting the children vaccinated. So we're taking a situation where they have very little risk and subjecting them to very long-term risk, because we don't know what the long-term implication of this kind of vaccination is. Now, you know, for adults and for elderly people, it's not the same risk. It's a very different risk profile. And for them, it makes sense. And even if there are long-term complications, they're going to be dead anyway. So, but that's not the case. That's not the case with children. And we really need to take a very different approach to the way we do things. And then the whole concept of natural immunity. You know, for years, we've known about natural immunity and the benefits of it. And now all of a sudden, we don't even want to recognize it. Yeah, there's no such thing. Now it's no good. And just so that we can create a one-size-fits-all model where we say everybody has to have the jab. And here we are in a nation that has the best medical system in the entire world. It seems to me like the logical thing to do is say, go and work with your doctor, who knows what your particular circumstances are and can recommend the best course of action for the government, instead to snatch the authority and begin to dictate to people what they should do. Makes very little sense, and particularly when you're dealing with the most important thing you have, which is your health. And if they can mandate about your health, they can mandate about anything. You're opening Pandora's box.
Yep, it is unprecedented, I think, in American history. It's pretty amazing. You know, I want to switch gears again to going forward. You know, you talked about the division that's been cropping up in our country, and I think it's pretty apparent now to everyone. People see it in their own families. You know, Thanksgiving coming up, and there's going to be, no doubt, many heated discussions around the table. How do we unite America again? Do you think it's possible? Are you encouraged by what you see? Are you optimistic for the future? Where do you think we go from here? And what should people do to try to get America back on track?
Well, I think we start with the children. You know, children are not naturally mean. They're not naturally prejudiced. You know, they learn that from us. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's one of the reasons, of course, we created the book, Why America Matters, showing children, you know, the very positive aspects of how this nation was developed. You know, we talk about the eagle, our national symbol, how it has two wings, a right wing and a left wing. Can't fly with two right wings, it can't fly with two left wings. But when you put them together and they work together, they're a very wonderful, beautiful, soaring creature. We have to start thinking about things like that and, not allow ourselves to be manipulated. That is really the key. There are those, for instance, who have taught us that America is evil, more evil than any place else because we had slavery. Now, an honest reading of history will show you that slavery's been a part of virtually every society since written history has been an occurrence, and that there are more slaves right now in the world than there have ever been with human trafficking that's going on. A lot of it right here in the United States of America, where the biggest appetite for that kind of thing has occurred. And we need to be dealing with it. We don't need to be going back 200 or 300 years. We need to deal with what's going on right now. And so trying to make the United States unique because we have slavery is crazy. What we are unique of is we were the nation that had so many people who opposed slavery that we were willing to fight a civil war and lose a substantial portion of our population to end it. And there are those who say, well, the Civil War wasn't about slavery. It was about preserving the Union. Well, why was the Union splitting up? It was because of slavery. Elementary, my dear Watson. So, we just need to open our eyes, recognize what's going on, stop trying to gain political advantage. This is, I think, one of the biggest problems that has occurred. Instead of being Americans, we're Democrats or Republicans or some other entity. And, the United States of America, that means we work together. And if we can get over the manipulation, which is occasioned largely by those who want to fundamentally change our society. And if you want to fundamentally change a society, what do? You have to make them dissatisfied with what they have already. And therefore, you drive wedges between people on the basis of race, income, age, religion, whatever you can find. And you drive those wedges and you create that disharmony. And voila, all of a sudden you've taken a society like ours, which sits at the pinnacle of the world, has the highest standards of living, and you create nothing but chaos. And people say, we can't go on like this. We have to change to a different system. But I think the American people are waking up, and I think they're smart enough to recognize that we don't want to trade what we have for socialism or communism. And that it can occur very rapidly. All you have to do is look at a place like Venezuela, which I've visited many times in the past before they turned. And it was a lovely place, a beautiful museums and resorts and hotels and shopping areas. The biggest controversy there that the people were always engaged in was whether or not they were the most beautiful people in the world. That was it. And now they've gone from the most prosperous country in South America to the least prosperous with a totalitarian government almost overnight. And if you don't think that can happen in this country, you just look at what's going on. You pick a group, you say they're the evil ones, they're causing all the problems. That's exactly what Marxists always do. And then you begin to persecute them, restrict them, and it goes on from there. We cannot allow that to happen in America.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with you, Dr. Carson. And my last question here before I ask you for your website and everything. We've seen faith increasingly driven out of the public square. We see courts trying to get God out of everything. And yet you've said many times that faith is fundamental to the American story. What's going on here? Do we need to make faith central in our country again? Our motto, "In God We Trust," even that has now come under question. What should be the proper relationship between faith and the American experience, and how can we restore that?
Well, faith goes hand in hand with liberty and giving people the ability to exercise their faith the way they want. Atheism is a type of faith. If you want to be an atheist, that's fine. I don't have any problem with that. But, don't bother people who have faith in God and want to live according to godly principles of loving your neighbor, of caring about the poor, of developing your God-given talents to the utmost so that you become valuable to the people around you, of having values and principles that govern your life. Let those people live their life. You live your life. That's what America is all about. That's what we must emphasize. And this intolerance toward people who don't believe the way you do, whatever your belief is completely un-American.
Yeah, Dr. Carson, you are just an inspiration to so many millions of Americans. And how can people get the book? How can people get involved? Where do we find the American Cornerstone Institute? What's the website? And what would you recommend to people?
I would say please visit our website, americancornerstone.org. There's a lot of information on there. There are op-eds, there are television interviews, conversation series, ways that adults can become much more familiar with our Constitution, our founding documents. And then there's littlepatriotslearning.com, littlepatriotslearning.com, where there are free lessons, K through five, curriculum that teaches the children the true history of our nation. Warts and all, we don't try to hide anything, but put it in the proper perspective, interactive teaching series, which kids absolutely love. And I recommend it for adults too, because not all of us know our history very well. And this is a really fun way to get to know it, particularly teaching it to your children at home and your grandchildren.
Well, Dr. Carson, I want to thank you so much for all that you've done for our country. Thank you so much for joining us and sharing your insight. And we, can't tell you how much we appreciate it. God bless you, and hopefully we'll catch up with you soon.